We want to talk a little bit this evening or this afternoon about a culture without God. Before I start, I want to say I thank God that I live in the United States of America. I truly do. But this country is not the country my father was born in. He was born 100 years ago. 1918. He died in 1986. And it's not the same country. And you and I, folks, have the challenge of preparing our children to live in this world. We're not supposed to go out of the world. We can't. We're to be light and salt. And it is what it is. And as we prayed tonight, and as we need to continue to pray, our culture can be turned around. But folks, it's up to us. 2 Timothy 3, chapter 1, the Bible says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God." If there was ever a phrase that described our country right now, I believe that one right there is it. Pleasure is above everything, and particularly above God. And what does he say? And from such, well, he says they have a form of godliness, but they deny its power, and from such people turn away. So we have a responsibility as Christian people to respond to a wicked society, a wicked culture in a certain way. We're not going to fix all of this in one sermon. My goal today is to get us to think about these things. And I've got some specific things I want to consider today, but there's a whole range of things that we need to be doing to help our children so that they can know how to live in a wicked world. And so that we can know how to live in a wicked world. In my lifetime, I'll be 58 here in a couple of weeks, and in my lifetime, there's been a systematic removal of God and of Christian influence from our culture. And it continues to this day. And I mean that in the broadest sense possible. I mean from the Christian influence on our law to the influence in our schools, in our government, in Hollywood, our entertainment culture, in every aspect of our culture, the Christian influence has been systematically removed. And we can't be neutral. And I think I'm concerned that all too often we've had opportunities to take a stand and we've decided that we need to be neutral. And we'll look at some more of those here in a moment. But we can't be neutral. Remember Jesus said in Luke 11 in verse 23, "He that is not with me is against me, and that he that gathereth not with me scattereth." We can't be neutral. As God and Christian influence has been removed from our culture, guess what happened? There's a vacuum. Guess what got sucked into the vacuum? The devil. We're either for him or against him. There's not another choice. And we have to be realistic about these things and about the evil nature of our world. And if we're realistic about that, we can properly, or it will help us to properly resist that influence on our lives and on our Christianity. And the darker the world is, the greater the opportunity to shine our light. With every challenge, there's an opportunity. I want to illustrate, I'm not spending a lot of time on this, but I want to illustrate what I have seen in our culture as changes. When I was young, most people were people of integrity. You could depend on them. They were honest. They had strong moral principles, and that's what the word means. It's not a Bible word, but it's a word that we understand. It's good that we be people of integrity. And it's harder and harder to find those folks anymore. It's better in small towns, usually. But even that is in rapid decay, at least in my small town. You know, people are involved in lying and cheating and stealing, and basically they just do whatever they think they can get by with. And do you know what you're left with when you take God out of the equation in a culture? All you've got is law. You try to control behavior with law. And that's the response to law. If there's no God, it don't matter what you do. Just gonna do whatever I can get by with. Well, unless the cops catch me. And that's where our culture's headed. And it's just chaos. You know, for those of you that were at the Brotherhood meeting yesterday, and he talked about Nigeria and the fact that you could not depend on the police. There's no integrity. And that's where our culture is going. We've had something better than that. We continue to have something better than that. But it's going in that direction. To illustrate that, last summer, and it happens every time, there's a storm. People immediately go into those areas where the law enforcement is distracted and they start looting, stealing whatever they can because they can get by with it. There's a general lack of work ethic in our culture. It's hard to find anybody that wants to work and it will do what they say they will do when they say they will do it. We have this entitled mentality that people have developed that, you know, society owes them everything. That's not a concept we get from Scripture. Everybody's wearing a chip on their shoulder, looking to be offended, looking to sue somebody. Again, you know, one of the things that happened after last summer's storm, there was a warning that went out. I believe it was from the Attorney General of the state of Texas, that if you're going to buy a used car, you need to pay attention. Why? Somebody figured out a way to get flooded out cars and get the water out of them and start selling them like they're good cars. It's just what people do. I don't know, for some reason in Lubbock, Texas, in 2017, there was like 3 or 4 hit and run accidents that there were fatalities. And people just left. Run over somebody and just leave. And I'm sure alcohol was involved in a bunch of that. I mean, I don't know, but I don't remember ever hearing of that when I was a kid. Sure, there were accidents, but people didn't just drive away. They stopped to see if they could help, but not so much anymore. I don't know what they do now. I hadn't done this in a while, but used to, if they've changed the whole registration inspection thing up. But used to, if you went to register a car and it was expired, they would say, well, have you been driving the car? And all you had to do is say, well, no. And they wouldn't charge you for those months when it wasn't expired. And I said, well, yeah, I've been driving the car. Well, you have to pay for those months. You don't gain anything. But the system is designed to encourage you to lie. It's just a little one, and you can save $3. But that's where we're at as a culture. We know Jesus said the thief, Satan, is the thief. And he came coming not but for to steal, to kill, and destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. But as Satan has got into the culture, sucked into that vacuum that was created when God was taken out, that's what's happening to our culture. And we see that influence. You know, just vulgarity is just rampant. I'm not talking about just vulgar language. That's part of it. But it's just indecent, obscene, lewd behavior. It's just everywhere. I was going down the interstate sometime recently, and there's this giant lewd billboard on the interstate advertising something. Well, thanks a lot. I have enough trouble keeping everything lined up without that. There's the cussing, the profanity, obscenities everywhere, in the bathrooms, on the walls, graffiti, all of that stuff. It's just obscene. You know, you can get on Facebook and you don't have to cuss. You just put the letters of the phrase on there. And everybody knows what the phrase means. And guess what? When I see that, what does my mind do? I don't need that either. I wish I didn't know what it meant, but I do. Sexual innuendo, dirty jokes. Last fall, there was a touchdown celebration in the NFL. I hope you don't know what I'm talking about. But it was just crude. And guess what? The guy's all over ESPN for 3 days. That's popular. That was funny. That's good stuff. If I seem angry, it's righteous indignation, okay? Erica, my daughter, told me one time, she said, "You seem so angry when you..." It's just passion. It's just passion, y'all. I'm not angry. You know, in the public discourse, which is so easily to be a part of anymore, you just get on social media and you can just say whatever you want to. And if somebody disagrees with you, all you have to do is just start calling them names. We don't have a discussion anymore. And we can't agree to disagree anymore. You just start calling your person, the other person, names, and it makes it all good. And just a fundamental lack of shame. Ephesians 5 verse 3, "But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place." That's what we ought to aim for. And that's what we need to teach our children to aim for. You know, it's very common now to call evil good and good evil. And that's where we're at in our culture in so many different ways. You just call evil good. And if you're opposed to that because you believe in good, then you're evil. We're evil. I don't know where I saw this quote even, but it's not my quote. But to those that hate the truth seems like hate. And that's where we're at. The truth seems like hate. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And he said the truth will set you free. But what our culture says is, well, that's hate. John 3:19, and this is the condemnation, that light has come into the world and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. We've got to keep shining the light though, folks. We've got to keep doing that. Because this thing I'm talking about is not new. We're not the first generation to have faced a decay in their culture. It's all too common. But here's the deal. Don't get used to the wickedness. We get callous to it. You know, my mother, bless her heart, she used to say, if you want to talk about sex in a sermon, you need to use Bible words. And I like that. I really do. But you know what the problem with that is? The devil don't have those restraints. He can do whatever he can say and do whatever he wants to whenever he wants to, including at church. And our culture's out there with all this misinformation about the subject. We better be correcting that in our sermons. We better be teaching our children the truth about sex and everything else. And the other problem with my mother's statement was, is that then she would go home and turn her TV on, and guess what kind of filth was coming out of that? And she didn't watch much TV, don't get me wrong. But you see my point, I hope. Don't get used to the wickedness. And I appreciated the fact that my mother had a sense of shame. And I don't want us to lose that. But at the same time, we can't ignore where our culture's at. 2 Peter 2:7, if he rescued righteous Lot, greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked. We need to be distressed by this wicked conduct. And we don't need to get callous to it. And we need to take the light wherever we go. So I want to talk about a couple of specific ways that I think we need to be taking the light into the world. And the first way is school. And I don't know what y'all do for school. But there's three basically different ways that you can choose to school your children these days. You can send them to public school. You can send them to a private school, which is typically a Christian-based deal. Or you can homeschool them. And we've done all three. And I believe all three are legitimate options and good choices for parents to make to educate their children if they're going to fight the right battles. Because whichever choice you make, you're going to have specific battles to fight. And don't ignore that. Whichever choice you make, if you send them to public school, recognize that secular humanism is the dominant idea. Now again, I'm generalizing here, and I know there's still some small schools that there's enough Christian people, good people there that it's not as bad. But you get in the bigger cities and folks, it's bad and it don't help. You do not as a parent get help on moral issues from school. Public school. Now if you send your kids to a private school, guess what? They're going to hear a bunch of false doctrine there. I think you can send your kids to a private Christian school. It's a legitimate choice, but you better be teaching them the doctrinal truth. And you can choose to homeschool, and that's got a whole different set of challenges. But the point is, whatever you do, fight the battles. I've got as my title here on this section of our study that Christian values benefit everyone. Do we remember where the public school thing come from? I'm sure y'all still have them, but about a mile down the road, there's a little brick building that part of it's still there. And it's where my dad went to school. A little community school. Do you know how that came about? The parents in that community got together and built a building and hired a teacher to come to teach their children. They didn't have the ability to teach their children. They had very little, if any, education, so they had to hire somebody to do it. Well, that has evolved to what we have today. Now, I want us to think about that. And I'm talking to Christian people here. Typically, those folks in those communities were all Christians. And what they did is they decided to get together and educate their children as a community. And they didn't teach their children doctrine. But they did reinforce the Christian values that those kids were taught at home. And they didn't get into the doctrinal thing. And we've lost sight of that. In Galatians 5 and verse 23, the Bible says, 22:3, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Now, in our country, Christianity and God has been kicked out of school. They tried to make a law against it. But there's not a law against those things. The apostle says so. And we don't need to accept that there can be a law against those things. And those things are true, and those things are good. And those things came from God. And they're a blessing to our whole community when we behave that way. Everybody's blessed. And we get to thinking about, well, what about the law? What about this idea of separation of church and state? So I want to talk about that for a minute. Beginning in the 1960s, the Supreme Court ruled that we have freedom of religion except in government-sponsored institutions, including public schools. Some of you are old enough to remember that. Some of you just live with the results of that. But the meaning of those rulings, in effect, was that these state-sponsored schools had to be protected from Christianity. That's crazy, right? Yeah, it's crazy. But that's what happened. Now, notice what this guy says. He was the one dissenting vote on when these rulings were taking place in the mid-60s. He says, it led not to true neutrality with respect to religion, but to the establishment of a religion of secularism. And that's exactly what's happened, folks. I told you earlier, you kick God out, that creates a vacuum. Guess what got sucked in? Oh, there you go. That's what got sucked in. And I want to illustrate what I just said. Here are some things that Christianity teaches us when it comes to values, to moral values, right, wrong, things that we would call matters of morality. When it comes to our sexual behavior, as a culture, it teaches us abstinence outside of marriage. You abstain. That's what Christianity teaches, and that's what we need to teach our children. And we're all blessed. The whole culture is blessed when that happens. Christianity teaches that life has value. The unborn life has value. The Down syndrome life has value. Any other handicap, everybody has value. Young and old, every person has value. That's what Christianity teaches. Christianity teaches us where we came from. It teaches us about creation. It teaches us why we're here, what our purpose is. And it teaches us why we have value. It teaches us that to spank and discipline our children in a loving, effective way is an act of love. In some of the harshest language in Scripture, the wise man said, "He that beateth not his child," he's talking about spanking. He's talking about teaching our kids discipline. It's an act of love. And Christianity teaches us that there are moral absolutes. Now here's the things that secularism teaches. When it comes to your sexual behavior, just do whatever you want to and have an abortion if you get pregnant. Or use birth control. And if that don't work, then have an abortion. And it don't matter because you just evolved from an ape anyway, so if you want to act like the animals, go ahead. And if you spank your child, I would never hit my child. Calling evil good? That's what that is. And I got that backwards, didn't I? They're calling good evil. And there's no moral absolutes, just all about what you want. And here's the result. And I know 1940 was a long time ago. But this particular deal I was looking at, they went 25 years before those Supreme Court rulings we were talking about. And then we're going to look at 1990 here in a minute, and that's 25 years after. So look at that. Pretty serious stuff going on there in the 40s. You know, you remember what I described a while ago about communities getting together and reinforcing Christian values at school? They wasn't teaching doctrine there that I know of. But they were reinforcing Christian values, and these were the big issues they were having. Well, you know what happened? Those things got replaced. And it's not any better today. Drug abuse, alcohol abuse, pregnancy, suicide, rape, robbery, assault. That's what's in school today. And my contention today is that's the result of removing God from school and trying to remove the Christian influence. And I've heard people say, well, you can't take prayer out of school. And I know, I get that. You can go to school and pray. But as a culture, we've removed him. If you're teaching your children Christian values at home, it's much more difficult to get that reinforced when you send them to school. So what do? Well, we're subject to higher powers. We're subject to the law of the land. I'm not teaching them that we need to rebel here. But I am telling you that as Christian people, we need to take our light to school. And we don't need to be ashamed of our Christian values because they benefit everybody. They benefit our culture. We ought to obey God rather than man. We know that. Well, here's our opportunity, one of them. And we need to be wise as serpents. He says, I know, I'm sending you out in the midst of wolves. And when I think about that verse, you know what I think about? A young person going to college. There's wolves there, folks. And we need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Let my heart be sound in thy statutes that I be not ashamed. And folks, that's how we prepare our children to live in this world. They need to know what the Bible says about these issues. They need to know what God expects of us and what He wants of us. And they need to be confident. And when they get out in the world, whether it's at college or on the job or anywhere else, and somebody decides to challenge their faith and to call them stupid or superstitious or whatever else negative word they want to come up with to describe a person of faith, they'll not be ashamed. And they'll remember to say Christianity benefits everybody. In Acts 26 and verse 24, it says, and as he thus spoke for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, thou art beside thyself, much learning doth make thee mad. You're crazy, Paul. That's what he says. Now, don't forget, Festus is the one that's in a position of authority here. And he's trying to make Paul look small. And embarrass him. And make him ashamed. He says, you're crazy. Paul ain't buying it. And that's the way we've got to be. I am not mad, most noble Festus. He was very respectful of Festus. He didn't call him names. But he didn't back away either. Speak forth the words of truth and soberness. That's what I'm saying. And that's what you and I have to learn how to do. Regardless of where we're at. James 4. James says, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? One of the hardest things we ask our children to do is to be different. And we are. We've got to ask them to be different. Now we need to put them in places where they can be successful. And we need to give them the information and the tools that they need to be successfully different. But that's what we're asking them to do. And what the apostle's talking about here is if we don't stick with God, we're not faithful to our covenant with Him. You're an adulterer. And that's what he's talking about. Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. I don't suppose everybody here is involved in school. But I think everybody here is involved in business. And we have as big a challenge in our culture doing business as anything I do. So I want to talk about that for a minute. I want to quote this gentleman. He was teaching a business ethics course at the University of North Carolina. This was in 2007. But he says, what we expect is that when students complete the ethics component, they will approach moral problems with greater thoughtfulness and intellectual sophistication, as well as be more likely to resolve these problems in the right way. Now, I'm not very sophisticated. But that's a bunch of hooey, y'all. Really? and this is the guy that's teaching our young people business ethics. What is the right way? Without God, what is the right way? And I assure you, he's not going to quote God here. He just throws that out there like it's just, you know, something everybody knows what's right. Without God, we don't. In those days, in Judges 17 and verse 6 says, there was no king in Israel, but every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And that's what we're left with when it comes to business or any other kind of ethics without God. This guy goes on to say, there is no mistaking the fact that profit maximization is the chief value within many business curriculums. We've got to make money. Yeah, we want to do it the right way, but we got to make money. That's what it boils down to, and that's what he's teaching them in a business ethics class. I contend there's an alternative, and I'm calling it the biblical model. This is the biblical way to do business. And it don't matter whether you're a customer, a consumer, or a business owner. There's a biblical model for us to do business. Recompense to no man, evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If he's going to cheat me, I'm going to cheat him first. That's not what that says, is it? You do the right thing as God has defined right, regardless of what the other person does. You do the right thing. And it's hard. It costs you money. Trust me. I mentioned the $3 deal earlier. That's nothing. You're going to be faced with choices in life that's going to cost you potentially big bucks. But you do the right thing. One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much, and one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. Now, thankfully, I've not had to work much in my life. I'm a farmer. I'm talking about working for other people. But I have tried to hire other people. And one of the challenges is hiring somebody that you can depend on. Folks, you're a Christian. Be dependable. Take your light into the business world. Be dependable. If you say you're going to do something, do it. If you don't know if you can do it, then don't make the commitment. Don't say you'll do it. And I've heard people say that they went to work at a place where they were expected to lie for their boss. Run! Don't do that. And do you know what the problem is? If I hire a guy that'll lie for me, he's going to lie to me. And it's just a one problem after the other. And I know there's places that that's the way they operate. Don't be that place. Most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find. If you ever try to hire anybody, you'll just have a parade of people come through telling you how good they are. That's just kind of the nature of the deal. I get that. But he contrasts that with this idea of being faithful. Doing what you say you'll do. Be faithful to God, but be faithful to your boss and to your spouse and to your children. Be faithful in all those ways. That you may aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we have commanded you. And I believe that's doable. I believe that Christians that go to work in the public and behave in a Christian way ultimately will be appreciated. Don't be ashamed of your Christian values ever. They benefit everybody. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as unto the Lord. This from Proverbs 22. Do you see a man who excels in his work? Somebody that's good? Somebody that's successful? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. You want to prosper? Do the right thing. And it may cost you, as I said earlier, in the short term, but ultimately, our culture and our society is blessed when we behave in that way. This is our last verse. There's a song in our book we sing sometimes at home. I suspect y'all sing it too. Instruments of Peace. And it's conveying the idea that I hope to convey with our study. Take your Christianity into the world with you, wherever you're going. And do the right thing. And don't be ashamed. It's a blessing to our culture. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. God bless you as you strive to live the Christian life in a wicked world, because it is a challenge, and I know it is.